Marathon sessions in the Senate as lawmakers sit for the third day of the impeachment trial. So, how are they holding up?
I think we're starting to see a little bit of just the hours and hours of this kind of taking their toll, and people are trying to pay attention, but their attention is wandering a bit.
Plus, how the Trump administration is cracking down on birth tourism. And have Alaskans forgotten how to handle the cold? It's Thursday, January 23rd. This is the PM edition of What's News from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. Two more Chinese cities are on lockdown as authorities try to contain the fast-spreading coronavirus ahead of the Lunar New Year holiday. It's the country's busiest travel period of the year. So far, the coronavirus has killed 17 people and infected more than 600. But the World Health Organization stopped short of declaring the outbreak a global public health emergency today, saying the virus is not yet an urgent threat outside of China. The Trump administration is issuing new rules restricting travel for pregnant women coming to the U.S. on tourist visas. As our Michelle Hackman explains, it's an effort to crack down on what the administration calls birth tourism, where visitors come to the United States so their children will be born as U.S. citizens.
They, you know, have also talked about this parallel idea of getting rid of birthright citizenship altogether. Now, that's a right enshrined in the Constitution in the 14th Amendment that says, if you are born here in the United States, no matter who your parents are, you get American citizenship. You know, President Trump has talked about getting rid of that through an executive order. I think most legal scholars agree that that's unconstitutional. He probably wouldn't be able to do that. And so this is another way of getting at that problem that really plays especially to President Trump's base, where a lot of them are complaining about people crossing the border and having children.
The new rule is one of many immigration policy changes the Trump administration has made recently. It's also planning to expand the travel ban, one of the highest profile policies, by adding restrictions to seven more countries. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will visit the White House next week, along with his main political rival, Benny Gantz, to discuss the Trump administration's Middle East peace plan. The White House wouldn't say whether it had invited Palestinian officials, but they are not expected to attend. The meeting is scheduled for January 28th. That's the same day Israel's parliament begins debating Netanyahu's request for immunity from charges including bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. Former Wells Fargo CEO John Stumpf has been barred from the banking industry as part of a settlement with the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. He also agreed to pay $17.5 million. The settlement is in response to the firm's fake account scandal, in which bank employees created as many as 2 million accounts without customers' knowledge. The OCC said Stumpf was or should have been aware of the problem. Several other Wells Fargo executives also faced charges in the scandal. It's day three of the Senate impeachment trial. Yesterday, Democratic impeachment managers began making their opening arguments for removing President Trump from office after a marathon session on the trial rules on Tuesday. It's going to be another long day today, and being held up in the chamber for hours on end is making lawmakers a bit antsy. We'll talk about all of that with Wall Street Journal reporter Lindsay Wise joining me now from the Capitol. Lindsay, this is the second day of Democratic arguments, which are happening now as we speak over the course of 8 hours today. What have we heard so far this week?
Well, so far, the Democrats have been making their case, laying out yesterday a very detailed timeline for everything that happened, you know, in the whole Ukraine scandal, the phone call and how it came to light and the aid that was withheld and the White House meetings that were, you know, leveraged and things like that. So just going through, you know, sometimes text message by text message and, you know, playing audio and video of the testimony from the House impeachment inquiry. So those were some of the witnesses that we saw during the House impeachment inquiry, including Fiona Hill and some of these State Department officials and national security advisors who were, you know, witnesses to this whole situation. And so I think yesterday was really dedicated to laying out the timeline as the Democratic House managers see it. They're the prosecutors in the trial. And then today they're trying to make more of a constitutional argument and trying to explain why these allegations against President Trump would meet the standard for removing him from office.
And Lindsay, you've been talking to senators, I guess, offline, if you will, during recesses and just on the Hill. Can you tell us generally what the mood is like and how senators are holding up during what can be very lengthy sessions?
I think that the mood has been, you know, especially at first, it was very solemn. I was in the room when all the senators stood to take their oaths of the Senate trial. They're asked to swear to do impartial justice. It's a special oath just for impeachment. They all stood at their desks and held their hands up and, you know, recited the oath that was delivered by the Chief Justice John Roberts. You know, we cover a lot of things up here that are historic, but I will say, for maybe the first time in my career, I did feel like it was a moment that it felt different. You kind of got that kind of electric feeling, like, wow, this is the trial of the President of the United States. So I think for those first couple of days with all this sort of ceremony and pomp and circumstance, there was definitely a feeling of seriousness. You looked at the senators' faces and they were very poker-faced and stern-looking, and they sat very still in their chairs for the most part. But I would say that, like, now that we're a few days into the opening arguments and some contentious sort of partisan battles over amendments and things, I think that we're starting to see a little bit of the decorum go by the wayside. So senators are chatting with each other, some of them passing notes, chewing gum. There was like a little exchange yesterday where one of the senators wanted to chew tobacco and was admonished by the sergeant at arms. So I think we're starting to see a little bit of just the hours and hours of this kind of taking their toll, and people are trying to pay attention, but their attention is wandering a bit.
Yeah, and speaking to that decorum that you mentioned, this is also different rules that are in place. No talking, leaving electronic equipment outside. It sounds like some senators are not totally adhering to those rules.
Yeah, this morning I did see Senator Barrasso from Wyoming wandering around with two cell phones shortly like after the trial had opened, although he did put them away. You know, there was a cell phone that rang yesterday in the chamber. Everyone was kind of looking around like, whose was it? And, you know, we have seen a little bit of, you know, folks leaving for very extended bathroom breaks. But my understanding is that there's actually a television in the bathroom off the floor that members use, and it has very high volume and they can watch in the bathroom. So even if they're not on that floor, that doesn't necessarily mean they're not following things closely. So I think it is one of those things, though. It's hard to imagine how anyone in this day and age could, like, sit still in a room for, like, 12 hours without their cell phones or, you know, without any distractions. I mean, they're not really supposed to snack or have coffee. They're not supposed to have any reading materials that don't pertain to the trial. Yesterday, Senator Rand Paul brought a crossword puzzle to his desk, and that was sort of seen as, you know, kind of a breach of the rules. But so far, like, you know, I think everyone understands that it's really hard for people to sit completely still. Most of the time, senators, if they are out of their chairs, are standing kind of behind the chairs, maybe rocking on their heels or kind of walking around and standing and leaning against the wall in the back.
And you mentioned coffee is a no-no. There's been some confusion, even among senators, about what beverages are allowed during the trial. So water is okay, and maybe milk is okay also? Please explain.
So this was like a rumor going around the very first day of the trial. I think on Twitter is where it started. But also senators were going around telling reporters, like, we're not allowed to have coffee, but we can have either milk or water. And no one could really figure out what this was for. Like, why was there, you know, only milk allowed on the floor, as, you know, other than water? And so I actually asked the Senate historian, and it looks like the current practice in the Senate is only to allow water on the floor. The members are provided with either sparkling or still water, which is brought to them by these house pages that are teenage students who work here as, like, almost like an internship here in the Capitol building. But apparently milk is, like, traditionally something that occasionally has been drunk on the floor. So going back to, like, I think there was an episode in 1908 that the Senate historian pointed out to me where a Wisconsin senator was doing an 18-hour filibuster, and he asked for milk with egg in it, which I guess at the time was sort of a version of eggnog, but then got very sick. There's been other episodes where I think there was a time in 1966 where one of the senators, who's very famous, Everett Dirksen, asked if he could have milk on the floor and asked if the rules forbade it. And it seemed that he wasn't told there was anything in the rules about milk, so he asked for some milk from the Senate restaurant. So I think it's more tradition that occasionally milk has come up as a beverage that senators requested on the floor. And yesterday, it was almost like a running joke with some senators. There were a few senators who tested that rule. And Senator Tom Cotton, Senator Burr, Senator Ted Cruz, like, had milk at their desk. So, but most senators seem to be drinking water. And I understand there is coffee allowed in the cloakrooms, which are private areas for each party, just rooms just off the floor where they can step off the floor for a few minutes. And there's also candy in there.
Always important to have candy. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Lindsay Wise. She's joining me from a very busy Capitol in Washington, where our team is covering the Senate impeachment trial. Lindsay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you can follow along with our live analysis throughout the trial on WSJ.com. And finally, it's cold, and it's been really cold in Alaska this winter, which shouldn't come as a surprise, except Alaska has been experiencing pretty mild winters for the past 8 years. After all that time, people there may have forgotten how to cope with the cold. Our Jim Carlton spoke to Alaskans during the current deep freeze.
This year, they're getting an old-fashioned winter. It's been down as low as like 45 below zero in Fairbanks, and they're doing some crazy things. The sled dogs, for example, are wearing coats, quilted coats, to go along with their booties. I talked to a musher who, she has a team of dogs that she gives them pink booties, quilted coats, and at night she puts a nice blanket on top of them so they're nice and snug. And so that seems to work. Some people are also, they're forgetting how to, like, take care of equipment. I talked to one gentleman in Barrow, Alaska, up on the Arctic coast, who forgot to plug in a warmer for his car, and his battery died. And so he was kind of embarrassed, feels like his Alaskan credential is going to be taken away because he let his battery die. but these are things you just forget. And then finally, at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, it's great fun for the students to go out in front of the outdoor thermometer and just put on their swimsuits and stand there and take a nice picture to show mom and dad and all their friends on Instagram.
Last summer, Anchorage hit an all-time high of 90 degrees Fahrenheit. Since the 1970s, the average temperature across Alaska has risen 3 degrees Fahrenheit. That's about twice the rate of the global increase. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.